Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, April 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital and its Saratoga Medical Group, with more than 30 specialty practices, including palliative care, geriatric care, podiatric surgery, and women's primary care, saratogahospital.org. Joining us this afternoon to discuss urology is Dr. Ann Darve-Bornos, a urologist at Albany Med who specializes in men's health and male infertility. If you have a question for Dr. Darve-Bornos, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your calls, your emails at voxpop@wamc.org are on the way on this Medical Monday right after news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday, and joining us this afternoon to discuss urology is Dr. Ann Darve-Borno, a urologist at Albany Med who specializes in men's health and male infertility. Dr. Darve-Borno completed fellowship training at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. She completed a general surgery internship and a urology residency at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine and earned her medical degree from SUNY Stony Brook School of Medicine. If you have a question for Dr. Darve-Borno today, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ann Darve-Borno, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ray. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, when I talk to doctors on this program, it always is something I'm curious about. To become a doctor requires such an investment of time, energy, focus, money. I always wonder why doctors end up in their chosen specialties. What drove you to this?
Good question. I think for me, it was really something I always wanted to do from being a little girl. I've always said I wanted to be a doctor, and just found my path in terms of liking and excelling in science and taking care of others. And definitely didn't expect to be going into urology when I entered into medical school, but I always joke that urology actually found me, and on my rotations, just it felt right and the people were great. And it's a great field that offers a lot of help to patients with especially quality of life issues.
It must be something that, I don't know how to exactly put this, but the challenges you face on a daily basis, you must not have expected that when you were a kid saying, hey, I want to be a doctor.
No, definitely not. I don't think it's quite easy to really anticipate what it is until you're into it. But you know, you've got to remain adaptable and learn to face those challenges.
We're joined today on this Medical Monday by Dr. Ann Darve-Borno, a urologist at Albany Med. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. What is the most common malady that you see every day in your job?
I would say it's a good mix of erectile dysfunction and male infertility for couples trying to conceive.
Now, what is the strict definition of male infertility? I know people who, they tried and tried for years, and all of a sudden, bam, there it is. I mean, is there a statistical cutoff that says, okay, this couple is infertile?
There is. So it's a couple that's considered infertile when they've been trying for at least a year. Unless the female partner is over age of 35, we then say trying for over 6 months.
Really? That's interesting. Our number here is 800-348-2551, and we are joined today by Dr. Ann Darve-Borno. Jim is in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Are there cases where pessaries are unable to correct cystocele?
Okay, you'll have to translate that, doctor. I have no idea some of those words.
I'm sorry, Jim. I did hear pessary and cystocele. Is that
correct? cases where pessaries are unable to correct cystocele.
So I think it's breaking up a little bit, but I think if I'm hearing is if a pessary fails, what's the next options for cystocele, also known as a pelvic organ prolapse in a female? I got to give you the caveat that this is not my area of expertise, and there's definitely several colleagues within the Capital District that treat female pelvic organ prolapse. But typically after a pessary fails, the next options include different surgical options to help fix the prolapse.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for that very detailed question. Our number here is 800-348-2551. What's the most common cause for male infertility?
Well, most common would probably be idiopathic, meaning a fancy word for we don't really know. There are all different things that can cause male infertility, leading from certain things that a man are born with, so testicular dysfunction, and for some reason the testicle doesn't produce the amount of sperm or the quality of sperm that we would like it to see. There's often a lot of genetic reasons that can cause that. Another thing that can cause it that we commonly see are varicoceles, which is a dilated veins within the scrotum, and those can impact fertility because it can impact the thermoregulation or the temperature control of the scrotum, and that can have an impact on the quality and the amount of sperm that is produced. And that's a very common cause of infertility that we see, and one that is or can be correctable.
In other words, the without going into great detail, how do you change the temperature and keep things either cool enough or warm enough? I don't know exactly.
Well, if a man has a varicocele, one of the options is doing the surgery to ligate the veins in the scrotum to basically remove the varicocele and normalize things.
Interesting. Dr. Ann Darve-Borno joins us today. Dr. Darve-Borno is a urologist at Albany Med who specializes in men's health and male infertility. The number is 800-348-2551. John is in Columbia County. John, you're on.
Hello. I just turned 63 today.
Congratulations. And happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. So I am taking generic CL, except my urologist, who I haven't seen over a year because of the pandemic, prescribed. My insurance covers it. It's inexpensive because he's prescribed it for slow urine flow, but also some ED. And
sure.
It works better for the ED. If I may be explicit, I would say I'm sexually functional, but more passively, but with the generic Cialis, completely functional. And I guess that's just background about that. But my main question is, since this is one of the drugs you can take long-term, which I do, although not daily, are there any long-term risks
of taking a low-dose daily Cialis?
Yes.
Is that not that we think it's very safe? It's been used for quite some time, and as you mentioned, one of the benefits of the lower dose Cialis is that it can help with urinary symptoms as well. And there are no long-term risks. It's very well tolerated in our patient groups. If I think I heard you right, that your urinary symptoms haven't improved as much as the sexual symptoms. So there's definitely other options, and it would be prudent to talk to your urologist about it, about maybe adding in other medications or exploring a different route to try and help you there.
Sure. So that's great. I haven't heard of that. So thank you.
All right, John.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for the call. We're joined today by Dr. Ann Darve-Borno on the program today. We see the commercials. We are inundated with the commercials. If you watch any TV, the little blue pills, what exactly do they do? In other words, I know what the end result is supposed to be, but what exactly are they supposed to do to your body to make everything happy?
Well, they all work in a similar way, Viagra, Cialis, but have different routes of how quickly they act, how long they act. And the end goal of all of them is to help increase some of the chemicals within the blood vessels of the penis that help increase blood flow. So some of the side effects of the pills is because it works the same way. So some men get flushing in their face and they feel like they're, you know, there's a rush of blood flow to their face or headaches. Those are because the way that it works is by increasing blood flow.
Interesting. Well, you know, if you have blood flow issues there, isn't it kind of a logical extension that you would maybe have some other health issues going on?
That's an excellent question. Yes, a lot of people look at erectile dysfunction as a window to a man's health. And there are a lot of things that go into a successful erection, including vascular or blood flow issues, neurogenic, so nerve issues, hormonal, all of those, and even psychological. So all of those components are really a good window to a man's health. And if we see a young man who has new onset erectile dysfunction and hasn't seen his primary care doctor or hasn't been screened, you know, for blood pressure and cholesterol and all those things, I definitely always recommend going to and establishing care with a primary care physician to start maintaining adequate annual surveillance.
Dr. Ann Darve-Borno joins us today on the program, Medical Monday. It's 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We will take a quick break, and then we'll get back to the calls and open up the email bag in a moment. Medical Monday on WAMC. Dr. Ann Darve-Borno is a urologist at Albany Med who specializes in men's health and male infertility. If you have a question to join in the fun here, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpomp@wamc.org. And Erica has done just that, Doctor. Erica writes, can you talk about how long a man must go after having vasectomy surgery to have sex or any release? Is that a length of time that is a hard line? And if so, why? That's from Erica.
Okay, yes, absolutely. So it's very important to know after a vasectomy that you are not immediately sterile. All of the way that vasectomy works is by cutting out the tube, the vas deferens, which carries the sperm from the testicle up through the urethra. And it's basically creating a roadblock for the sperm. And all of the sperm that are upstream of that new obstruction are there and capable of causing pregnancy. And on average, it takes about 2 to 3 months or 20 to 25 ejaculations to basically what we say, clear the pipes. It can rarely take up to 6 months or even a year to fully clear out the sperm. But at the 2 to 3 month mark after a vasectomy, we recommend getting a semen sample that you can look under a microscope, that will look under a microscope, make sure that there's no sperm present, and give couples the green light to remove the other forms of contraception.
So in health class, we learned what a vas deferens does, and we learned of how a vasectomy is. And going back to high school, I always wondered, okay, well, you know, you cut that tube or tie that tube, and yet the body still produces sperm.
It does.
Where the heck does it all go?
It does. That's a good question. It's still made, and it's the full function of the vas deferens is really just a transport tube, and the sperm is made in the testis, and then it is carried through the vas deferens, and it basically dies and then just gets absorbed by the body, the dead sperm after they meet the obstruction there. Occasionally, we do see what's called a granuloma, and that's basically a little bump that can form at the site of the vasectomy, and that's just the tube kind of blowing out from the pressure that it's seen from the new obstruction, and that's totally benign. It happens about 7% of cases of men who have had a vasectomy. And always something I warn them about so they don't feel a lump about a year later on and worry that it's something bad.
This one is from Ben, and Ben writes, I'm able to urinate normally when awake, but have a very weak stream when I get up to pee after being fast asleep. I have a slightly enlarged prostate, but I don't understand why there's such a difference between night and day. And that's from Ben.
That's common, and that's most likely due to just how full the bladder gets overnight, meaning, you know, you're not emptying it on a regular basis as you would during the daytime. So the way that the, you know, the bladder has to create more pressure and force to open up the bladder neck and get the urine out. It's nothing to, you know, concern about, meaning it's not, you know, going to be harmful, but if it progresses and his symptoms become worse, definitely seeing a urologist to talk about treatment options for that would be indicated.
All right. Now, I'm not sure that this email, and this one came in quite a long time before the show began, is one that is in your wheelhouse, doctor, but we'll give it a shot. This is from Mary Lynn in Poughkeepsie. And Mary Lynn writes, I drink a protein smoothie every morning, have been doing so for 40 years. The smoothie includes 1 to 2 cups of raw spinach, which I love. Someone just warned me I shouldn't eat so much daily raw spinach for fear of kidney stones. Too much oxalate?
That's true.
Please inform.
It's true. It's true. It can be a risk for forming kidney stones. You know, it's uncommon, but it's definitely something that we see in people that drink daily smoothie juices or daily spinach smoothies or juices. They can definitely be more at risk to forming oxalate stones.
Huh.
But I don't want to tell you to not drink, you know, spinach smoothies or juice because they are good for you, but maybe just not a daily, maybe every other day or a couple times a week.
I want to thank you, Dr. Darborno, for giving me a great excuse for not eating my spinach at the house. So this has been a success. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Leo in Saratoga. Leo, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about Peyronie's disease.
Sure.
I've actually had a long history of problems. Like at age 3, I had my first bilateral inguinal hernia repairs and variceal anhydrocele surgery. I had both sides repeated at age 18. And now I'm at 55. And went to bed perfectly normal one night and woke up the next day with Peyronie's. Seen a couple urologists who essentially said to me there was no treatment, and then found another urologist who has been treating me with Xyloflex. Not a fun thing to do, but a worthy cause, I thought. But it seems we make progress and then make regression. I don't know, is it the treatment being administered improperly that's causing the regression, or is it just the disease process itself?
Sure.
He's not a real talker.
Okay.
He's a real artist.
So first of all, I'll clarify for some of the listeners. So Peyronie's disease is a name for curvature of the penis, and it is actually quite common. We think it's gotten about up to 11 to 13% of men, maybe even more, as we do think it's probably underreported. It is what we think abnormal scar tissue that's laid down on the lining of the penis and can cause pain and curvature. There are a couple phases of Peyronie's disease. So when you first notice the curvature, it's considered the active phase. And tend to think that can last anywhere from 6 months up to a year. And in that active phase, the curvature can, in 15% of the time, improve on its own. 50% of the time, it stays the same and stabilizes. And in the other small percentage, it actually can worsen. And we let it kind of stabilize before we really consider treatment to see where it ends out. And once you are in the stable phase, that's really where it will likely stay for the rest of your life. So once you're in the stable phase, we have a couple treatment options, ranging from doing nothing, because it's not a health consequence by any means. You know, it's not going to harm you and in any way, but we do treat it for if it's not functional. So if you're not able to have intercourse, or if it's causing pain, or if you just don't like the looks of it, there's also a reason to treat it. Xyoflex, the injections that you're getting, is a medication that is a collagenase. So it works by breaking up that abnormal scar tissue there. And it works slowly over the time, and it's a course of several injections. How many injections have you received so far?
I think I've had 5 courses, so 10 injections.
Okay. So you've really finished it then. And it works slowly over time. And, you know, Xiaflex probably isn't going to get you to be 0 degrees perfectly straight. But the goal of it is to get you to a point where it's functional and where you're happy with the results.
So one other question with Xiaflex, any documentation of, like, decrease in mass of the size of the penis, like,
Wouldn't be from the Xiaflex itself, but that certainly can happen from Peyronie's disease. And it's the same mechanism.
So Peyronie's itself. Okay.
Yeah. The Xiaflex is actually one of the treatment options that helps preserve penile length as opposed to some of the other options. Some of our surgical options have a risk of further penile shortening. So Xiaflex actually helps with it. Yeah.
All right. Well, Leo, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday today. Dr. Ann Darve-Borno is a urologist at Albany Med who specializes in men's health and male infertility. And we go now to Leland in Worcester, New York. Leland, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
Doctor, my question is regarding erectile dysfunction associated with chemotherapy, long-term chemotherapy.
Sure.
Are there any ways to alleviate that problem?
Well, retreat it similarly to how we would treat other erectile dysfunction. Chemotherapy can have a number of effects, but it can also, you know, affect your hormone profile. So it's definitely worth getting your testosterone checked and things like that to see if there's any treatment options there. Otherwise, we would treat it the same way as we would any other erectile dysfunction, which consists with starting with medications, things like Viagra or Cialis. And then if those don't work, the next options we usually consider are penile injections. So it's the same kind of medication as Viagra in a way, but it's injected right into the penis and so much more of a local, stronger acting drug. And then there are some penile pumps as an option as well, a vacuum erectile device. And that's something you can actually just buy online and you don't need a physician order for. All the way up to the most invasive approach, which would be a surgery for a penile implant.
Okay, well, the Viagra Cialis solution doesn't work.
Okay, and you've tried a full dosage of it? Do you know what you've tried?
I've tried more than a full dosage as well. It doesn't work.
Okay. One of the important things about the medication, if you are taking Viagra, it's important to take it on an empty stomach so that it absorbs well, and that you take about 1 to 2 hours before planned intercourse. Cialis is a little bit longer acting and takes longer to absorb, so that I tell patients to take at least 3 to 4 hours before planned intercourse. If you've failed the medications, I think that one of the next best options is to consider the penile injections, which is something you'd have to see a urologist for and be taught how to do. And we would, you know, test it, make sure that it works, make sure you're happy with it.
Leland, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here on Medical Monday is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Ann Darve-Borno of Albany Med. And on the commercials we see, and I see a lot of these medical commercials, and 15 years ago, there were no medical commercials, but now they're all on, and they all list side effects because that's the law. So when you see these ED medications, and there are several of them on TV, they all almost all mention, hey, it can cause your blood pressure to get very low. Why does it do that?
Well, it's the same mechanism that I was talking about, how they work, is that they vasodilate is the word for basically causing the blood vessels to open up. And Viagra was actually created at first to treat what's called pulmonary hypertension or high blood pressure within the lung vessels. And they, in the discovery of it, noticed that a side effect was improved erections in men. And so that's how Viagra and the rest of those drugs really were discovered and came about to be. So that's where how the side effect happens.
And if you drink, then presumably it could drop further, and it can be dangerous?
if you potentially, yes, in moderation, it is safe, though.
We're joined today by Dr. Ann Darve-Morneau, and the number is 800-348-2551. We go to Dan in Kingston. Dan, you're up.
Oh, I have an enlarged prostate, and I was considering, I'm 77, I'm considering some of my options. One would be a TUR, which mm-hmm. I into seems very, very rough. They have another procedure called, I think it's like a little circlip that they put in and expand the prostate. Do you have any feeling about that?
Yes, there are. So BPH, or benign prostatic hyperplasia, what you're explaining is a very common finding in men as they age. And there are now a whole slew of procedures that can help. The TUR that you're talking about is the, you know, the gold standard. It's the procedure that we've been doing for years. But like you said, the man does have to go to the operating room, go to sleep. And there are newer procedures now out. I think the one that you're mentioning, it might be called UroLift, which is a band that helps to expand that opening of the prostate. There's also something called Resume, which works by heating up the prostate. And both of those can be done in clinic without anesthesia, and is definitely a good option for men that are the right candidates. The thing with them is that you have to be, your prostate has to be a specific size, and it's definitely something being worth being evaluated by a urologist who really specializes in BPH.
Like right now, I have very slow urination, and actually the best medical device I've got is the pen, which really works pretty well. With the UroLift, is there a danger of the prostate growing over it on the inside and giving you further obstructions?
I think if I understand your question correctly, there is a risk that the UroLift will not be as durable, meaning the effects of it won't last as long as some of the other procedures, but it doesn't preclude you from going on to have further procedures in the future if that's the way it would happen.
All right, Dan, thanks a lot. We're going to take a break here in a moment. Is it true that at some point in every man's life, if they live long enough, they will have their prostate will enlarge?
Yes, yes. As men age, their prostate does slowly grow as well.
And is there an age where you say, okay, well, this is about right, we don't really need to do anything, or an age where you say, oh my God, it's twice as big as it should be?
No, it's all based on symptoms and bother. You know, we have some men that come in and are have a weak stream or feeling like they do have some symptoms of BPH. But if they're not that bothered by it and they're able to empty their bladder and their kidneys aren't affected, then we don't have to do anything about it. It's really all driven by their symptoms and how bothered are you by your symptoms.
Let's take a quick break here. We are joined today by Dr. Ann Darve-Morneau, a urologist at Albany Med who specializes in men's health and male infertility. Our number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll be back. It's Vox Pop, Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Dr. Ann Darve-Morneau joins us today from Albany Med, and this email from Nan in Wilton. Nan writes, my urine 24-hour volume is twice what my doctor wanted. Calcium 900 milligrams. Doctor is testing for hyperparathyroid. No matter how much water I drink, I'm almost always dehydrated and tired. How much water is needed? Is it by weight or other? What can I add to intake to help? And that is from Nan in Wilton.
All right, thank you. So, you know, we want your urine output to be about 2 liters per day in order to prevent kidney stones. But his your calcium is high from hyperparathyroidism, which is your parathyroid gland in your neck can stimulate to increase an abnormally high level of calcium. The amount of water that you're going to drink isn't going to help negate that. So if that's really what's happening, he should be going to a endocrinologist to be evaluating the parathyroid hormone and potentially even talk about surgical options to help with that.
All right. This one's from Bonnie. And Bonnie says, how can an overactive bladder affect the kidneys and what symptoms would signal there's a problem? And that's from Bonnie.
Typically, an overactive bladder does not affect the kidneys unless there is a neurogenic cause for why the bladder is overactive. So if a patient has a spinal cord injury or some kind of neurogenic cause, the bladder can cause really high pressures when contracting, and those pressures can then go up to the kidneys, up the tubes that drain the urine to the bladder are called the ureters, and sometimes the urine can pop up back to the kidneys and cause the kidneys to have to work extra hard to get the urine down to the bladder. But typically, overactive bladder does not have that, and the bladder is able to maintain healthy, normal pressures.
All right, one more email, and then we'll hit the phones once again. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Dr. Ann Darve-Borno, this one's from Mark. Mark says, we've all heard stories about oysters and what they're supposed to do for people in the bedroom. Maybe that's true, maybe not. But what about nutrition in general? Are there certain foods that men should be eating to improve erectile function? Chocolate or strawberries, perhaps? And that is from Mark.
That's an excellent question. And I'm a strong believer in both diet and exercise for maintaining general well-being, but also sexual health. So we know that diet and exercise can help increase testosterone naturally and help with erections as well. And the best foods, what I always say to patients is the easiest thing to remember is almost the Mediterranean diet is really the healthiest diet for erections and testosterone. So lots of vegetables, lean protein and meat, things like oysters that has been studied, pomegranates, those have been shown to help. Magnesium as well is another nutritional nutrient that can help. The other thing is very important is a good sleep hygiene. So getting good 7 to 8 hours a night of sleep can help with your overall health, but also we see men raise their own testosterone levels and even erections with better sleep. And especially undiagnosed sleep apnea is something to be aware of because that can also affect your erections and overall sexual health.
Dr. Ann Darve-Borno joins us today on Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Ron in Saratoga. Ron, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. A few months ago, the government came out against generic screening for PSA. And that seems to me to be a particularly bad idea if you have, you might overlook, possible prostate cancer. And so I was wondering, is that just another example of the Trump people giving us out bad medical information, or is there some reason for that?
Yeah, so Ron, that's a great and very complex question that someone could talk about for about an hour. So PSA is a screening tool that we use for prostate cancer that we started using at the end of the 1980s and 1990s. And what we saw was started to see a large an overdiagnosis and potentially overtreatment of men with prostate cancer. And based on two big studies in 2012, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force actually came out and recommended against PSA and prostate cancer screening because they were concerned of the amount of overdiagnosis of prostate cancer leading to overtreatment and risk associated with it. Prostate cancer is a very slow-growing prostate cancer, so it's something that a lot of men die of and not with. Die with prostate cancer, not of prostate cancer. That being said, since 2012, we've started to see a shift in an increase in men being diagnosed with prostate cancer that's advanced. And urologists have really fought to overturn that
Good.
That U.S. Preventative Task Force, and just a couple years ago, they have now reversed that and do recommend PSA screening, particularly for men between the ages of 55 and 70, but starting at the age of 40, if there are risk factors, including family history or African-American race, and it really just being a shared discussion with your provider, whether it's something you want to do or not. One of the things that is also, you know, to keep in mind is that because prostate cancer is so slow growing, that if a man's life expectancy is less than 10 years, the benefits don't really outweigh the risks of searching for something that you don't want to find.
Yep.
Does that answer your question?
Gotcha.
All right, Ron, thanks so much for the call. It's Urology Today with Dr. Ann Darve-Borno, and the number is 800-348-2551 on Vox Pop. Let's go to Mary in Albany. Mary, you're on.
Hi, yes. So my husband asked me, because he saw me do a breast self-exam, and he said, is there anything you can do for me regarding my testicles? Is there anything that the doctors can do to find any lumps or worrisome bumps? And I just wanted to know your opinion on that.
Absolutely. So, you know, during an annual physical, a man should be getting a scrotal testicular exam. But I recommend monthly self-exams while in the shower. You know, just doing a thorough exam and feeling for anything different. That's what you want to be monitoring, is seeing if there's anything new from prior that you're noticing, any firmness or new lumps or bumps. And if there is, definitely, you know, bringing it to your doctor's attention, potentially getting, what they would do is get an ultrasound to further evaluate.
Thank you.
Thanks. You're welcome.
Mary, we appreciate the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. On this Medical Monday, 1-800-348-2551. JD in Woodstock. JD, you're up.
Hi, thank you for doing this show today. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer a bit over a year ago, and have held off on, immediately the urologist wanted me to consider either having it surgically removed or do radiation, and okay. I held off. In my research, I learned of a procedure called HIFU, high frequency ultrasound. And I'm wondering if you know anything about it and its efficacy for treatment of prostate cancer.
Sure, I do. I mean, I know a little bit, just it's not my area of expertise in terms of treating prostate cancer. I can tell you that it's a, you know, newer form of treatment, which means that anytime there's a newer treatment, there's less test of time, meaning, you know, how well will those results stay? How long will you be free of prostate cancer after being treated? How the follow-up time afterwards in terms of monitoring for side effects and symptoms, how long can they continue to happen, everything from that. So the two, you know, main tried and true treatments for prostate cancer are truly surgery, like you mentioned, removing the prostate, and radiation as well. As well as if it's a lower risk prostate cancer, we're often now monitoring them with what we call active surveillance.
That's me, yeah.
Okay.
Alrighty. Okay, thank you.
JD,
you're so welcome.
Thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Ann Darve-Borno joins us today. This email from Joe. And Joe writes, I'm a 59-year-old male. Sometimes I have a problem with erections, but not always. The bigger problem recently has been lack of longevity, like down to minutes. Does that indicate any problem that you see? Why would that happen? And that's from Joe.
I'm not sure if he, there's two things that he could be discussing. If it's difficulty maintaining the erection, which is just a, you know, a form of erectile dysfunction. And when I hear that, you know, you think about certain pathologies that could be treating, that could be causing erectile dysfunction, but ultimately we would treat it the same. And how we discussed earlier, starting with medication with things like Viagra and Cialis. The other thing that is a very common finding is premature ejaculation, which is defined as reaching climax or ejaculation after 2 minutes. And that can be quite bothersome. And also fairly difficult to treat, unfortunately, sometimes. We typically start with a over-the-counter spray that is like a lidocaine to help desensitize the penile skin, and behavioral methods. Occasionally, we do actually use SSRIs, or antidepressants, that have the unwanted side effect in many of increasing latency time, but we use it to our advantage to treat premature ejaculation.
All right, Dr. Ann Darve-Bornos joins us. This email from Anonymous, and Anonymous writes, and I'm not sure what these terms are, so you'll have to define them. What are some long-term effects of infant hypospadias corrective surgery? What is that?
So hypospadias is a common, about 1 in 100 boys that are born with the urethra that is not where it should be. It's not at the tip of the penis. And there's a big range of where the hypospadias can be affecting. It can be just below where the urethral meatus typically is, all the way down to the penis-scrotal junction. So depending on how severe of a hypospadias and how significant of the correction that is needed, I think the risk and complications of those surgeries vary. But there can be urethral strictures, which is where the new urethra that is created can have scar tissue and make it difficult to urinate, or recurrence of the hypospadias are some of the bigger two.
Our guest today is Dr. Ann Darve-Borno, and let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. Bob is in Ludlow, Massachusetts. Bob, you're on.
Yes, hi. I'm 64, and my doctor prescribed testosterone cream.
Okay, and have you started using it?
No, I haven't. I just want to know what your thoughts on.
Sure. So did you have your testosterone checked, and was it low?
No, my doctor says it wasn't low.
Okay. Well, typically, so if a man has low testosterone, which we define as less than 300 on a morning level, so before 10 a.m., because testosterone fluctuates and is highest in the morning, so that's when we like to check it. So if a man has low testosterone, low than 300, and has symptoms, including either, you know, fatigue, erectile dysfunction, low libido, decreased muscle mass, decreased bone mass, then that's considered a low testosterone that we would want to treat. So without knowing your values, it's a little hard to know, and without your symptoms. But if you do fall into that category, starting with a testosterone cream or androgel is a very good starting point to see if that can raise your testosterone to normal levels and to help, you know, suppress your side effects. Now, testosterone replacement definitely has a lot of controversy over the years, and there's a lot of potential risks associated with it. But the more recent data is what we think that when you take a man who has a normal testosterone and bring it to the super high levels, that's when we actually see some of the risks, the cardiac risks and things like that. Whereas a man with low testosterone, that low testosterone also poses some cardiovascular risks, and bringing them to a normal level is actually protective.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call. Why cream and just not pills, something you ingest, take in the morning?
Unfortunately, the testosterone pills have a way of being metabolized that it doesn't get absorbed as well. There is a one that's being used in Europe and has recently been FDA approved for use here, but it hasn't quite gained widespread use yet. It's not FDA approved for it's very specific case scenario where it's FDA approved for. I think there is probably some concern about abuse potential of the pills as well in terms of making it easier to get a hold of.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones and Mary in Turner's Falls. Mary, you're on.
Hi. My husband takes SSRI for depression, and he's taken different ones that have side effects that are not good. But he was then given a prescription for Viagra, which helped. But now the problem is the Viagra doesn't work. In other words, he's able to get erect, but he can't finish. So this is something new. And,
yes,
you know, so now we're going to send him to the doctors and get a physical. But, you know, he's not diabetic. He doesn't have high blood pressure. so there isn't any of the other things we think about. But Viagra worked for about a year or two, and now it doesn't work.
Yes. Now, what you're saying is a very challenging, scenario, because I was actually mentioning a little bit earlier that we often use SSRIs in our treatment of premature ejaculation because it basically resets the wire and the wiring in the patient to delay the climax in ejaculation. Now, in the scenario where the SSRI is helping the man in, you know, his depression and other reasons to be on it, it's not as easy to say just remove it for the sake of climax. The one thing that I do recommend is that some of them have, are bigger offenders of doing that. And in some people, one medication will do it, one SSRI will do it, but one won't. So it is something that often patients will talk to their physician and either change medications and try to mitigate those effects. Unfortunately, there's nothing that we can really do to easily change it.
He's done that. He's tried different medications, and then he's even tried going off it for 24 hours to see if it would help. But the thing was, the Viagra worked for a year or two, but now it doesn't. So I think we've established that this is the medication he needs. But so once the Viagra,
Viagra will help with erections, but not necessarily ejaculation. One of the things you consider is stimulatory devices, a vibratory device. Sometimes that can help because the ejaculation is actually a reflex, and using that can sometimes help.
What is that? I've never heard of it. I'm sorry.
A vibratory device.
Okay, well, unfortunately, that's where we'll have to leave it, Mary. I apologize for cutting you short. Hey, Dr. Darv Bornos, thanks for being with us today.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
We appreciate it. Support comes from the Joint Replacement Center at Adirondack Health at Saranac Lake, providing tailored orthopedic procedures and rehabilitation to residents of Northern New York. Better health, better lives, adirondackhealth.org. There you go. The show has reached its happy ending. Thanks to Dr. Darv Borno for being here from Albany Med. And thank you for listening. Thank you for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Joe Makowicz took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, we welcome back Dr. Eric Yeager, and we'll discuss the latest on the COVID vaccines. And that's tomorrow at 2. Be with us for that. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.